British Sky Broadcasting presents Bullet, starring Steve McQueen. Music by Lalo Schifrin. Voiced by Neville Watchhurst on behalf of MCS Agency. A city skyline at night. One building is topped with huge letters proclaiming Chicago Sun-Times. A chrome lampshade reflects banks of high-tech recording equipment and a wall of glass panes, on the other side of which stands a group of men, their faces strangely blank and sinisterly half-lit. The studio or office containing the high-tech equipment is large, with several desks bearing typewriters, 60s lamps, and pieces of decorative sculpture and other paraphernalia. A wood-veneered door bears the names Mr. John Ross and Mr. Peter Ross in white plastic uppercase characters. A man in a stylish Homburg hat and dark overcoat seems to be hiding behind a piece of office furniture. He looks nervously towards the glass wall and at the group of men on the other side. Lights go on and the men disperse. The man in the Homburg pulls the pin on a smoke grenade and rolls it across the floor towards the windows. One of the men smashes through a window. Smoke billows out from the grenade. The man in a Homburg makes a break for it in the confusion. He emerges from a lift into a basement car park. He pauses before a glazed door marked Danger and stares through into the car park, where stands a heavy-set man returning his gaze and smiling enigmatically. The man in the Homburg pushes through the door. The other man draws close and pats him on the shoulder. The man in the Homburg goes to a white car and drives away. The heavy-set man watches the car disappear. As the car pulls up the exit slope, another man appears and starts shooting at the vehicle. The car gets away. The heavy-set man appears satisfied and walks towards the door leading to the lift. A man stands in the Ross's office making a call.
This is Pete.
Yeah.
We lost him.
He's your brother, Ross. If you can't find him, we have people who will. And you're paying for the contract.
Pete, looking deeply troubled, hangs up the now dead phone. Between monumental buildings in pale stone is a narrow gorge at the bottom of which is a busy street. A gold-colored taxi cruises along. The driver sticks out his arm as he hangs a left at a junction. The car drives across a broad square and through the entranceway to what appears to be a plush hotel. The man in the Homburg gets out from the cab and walks between other taxis up to the revolving door of the hotel. He passes through this and walks across the lobby towards the reception desk.
Yes, sir, I'll be glad to confirm that for you.
Excuse me. Have you got a message from Mr. Ross?
What room, sir?
Oh, I'm not a guest.
I'll check.
Thanks. That's, Johnny Ross.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir. Nothing.
Nothing? Are you sure?
I'm sure, sir.
Okay, thanks.
Ross walks away across the hotel lobby. He re-emerges and walks towards his cab. A doorman in a strange Cossack hat and military-style coat grabs the rear door handle and pointedly half-opens the door. Ross gives him an odd look, then gets in.
Thank you.
A toy Alsatian dog nods in the rear of the cab. The doorman watches from the hotel steps. A tram passes as the cab pulls back out into the traffic and heads off down a steep hill. The doorman speaks into a payphone.
Yes, I'm sure it was him. Sunshine Cab, 6912.
Ross sits in the cab. He holds a list headed San Francisco. He crosses off item one, pick up message, Mark Hopkins Hotel.
Cabby, would you pull up? I want to make a call.
Right.
The cabby pulls over to park by a public phone booth. John Ross gets out and looks around carefully. Crossing over to the phone, he makes a call. The cabbie observes as Ross talks animatedly into the phone. A man crosses a street and enters a building. He climbs steps to the door and rings the bell. A man lies asleep in bed. He fumbles for the entry phone.
Yeah?
Del Getty.
What is it?
Work. Frank.
Let me in, will you?
Frank launches himself out of the bed and, hobbling strangely, comes down a flight of stairs and yanks a handle fixed to the wall which releases the front door lock. Dalgetty enters while Frank goes back to sit huddled and yawning on his bed. Dalgetty, unbidden, goes to the fridge and gets out a can and a glass.
What time did you get to bed this morning, Frank?
Five.
Dalgetty walks into the bedroom. Frank reaches briefly for the glass of juice, only to find Dalgetty has poured it for himself. Dalgetty pulls down the window blind, causing Frank to wince. He picks up a newspaper.
Mumps vaccine on the market. The government authorized yesterday what officials term the first clearly effective vaccine to prevent mumps. A nurse has granted a license for the vaccine, you mind? Research laboratories at West Point. At 12:45 Wednesday.
Why don't you just relax and have your eyes just shut up, Dalgetty? Yeah?
Dalgetty throws a stern look at Frank.
Let's go, Frank.
Cars climb one of the steep hills around San Francisco Bay. At the top, a traffic cop waves cars on past a parked Rolls-Royce. Dalgetty pulls in at the wheel of a black sedan. In the rear sits a young man. Frank gets out from the front passenger seat and heads into an elegant house amid crowds of well-heeled women. Frank gives his name to a young man at the door.
Well, now, can you grow roses easily in Sausalito?
Well, you don't normally. There are other people.
I would think you'd buy another one.
Lieutenant Bullard is
here, Mr. Charles. Idiot out of that interview. I just love it.
Conditions in our local politics here.
It was purely unintentional, I assure you. It wasn't that I was so well informed. It was just that I was so ill informed. Would you excuse me for a moment, please?
But I think the generation
can't do you like it?
Well, in Arinda, we have all this beautiful, dry sunshine. It's absolutely perfect for roses. It's like I do all my own work. You should see my hands for pruning.
Hello. Lieutenant, how are you? Thanks for coming over. Name is Frank, isn't it?
That's right.
Please call me Walt. I have an important job for you. Captain Bennett suggested that you take it. As you know, there's a Senate subcommittee hearing here Monday. And I have a star witness who needs protection. Sam said that you were the man for the job. And I can't find a flaw in that statement.
Protection from who?
The organization. His name is Ross. Johnny Ross from Chicago. Once and for all, the top men in law enforcement are united. We're going to expose the organization.
I read your speech. Why San Francisco?
Ross is safer here. That's your province. Keeping him out of reach for 40 hours.
Where?
The Hotel Daniels. 226 Embarcadero Road, room 634. He's there now, expecting you. So now that you know where my house is, Lieutenant, I hope that we'll get to see a lot more of each other. Particularly in view of the investigation. A senatorial hearing has a way of catapulting everyone involved into the public eye, with subsequent effect on one's career. It'll be a pleasure to have you along. Have him in court on Monday, Frank.
The urbane politician turns to go back inside. Frank, half smiling to himself, comes back down the elegant steps and gets back into Dalgetty's car.
What was that all about?
Pals.
You and Chalmers, huh? It's a lot of juice.
Hotel Daniels, 226 Embarcadero Road. State's evidence, witness, and we're babysitting. Let's go. You
got any coffee, Tom?
Yeah.
The three cops stand bunched together in a small lift. They pull open the grill and head down a narrow corridor. Mutterings seem to be coming from the rooms crowding in on either side. They locate room 634. Frank nods to Dalgetty, who knocks.
Yeah, who is it?
Police.
Roof and the exit.
Frank dispatches the younger cop. Ross scrutinizes the badge flashed by Dalgetty, who then enters, followed by Frank.
Mr. Chalmers said you'd be here by 5. He guaranteed me that.
Oh, sorry, we got held up in traffic. You got any firearms?
No, man, I got nothing on me. Just my wallet. Some red lighter. You want to check me out yourself?
No, that's not necessary. Put that stuff on the bed, will you, please?
Frank checks out the view onto the busy freeway right outside.
How did you get here from Chicago?
I flew.
Sure none of the boys were on the plane with you or saw you get on?
How would I know? I wouldn't know.
Mm-hmm. How come you picked this room to hold up?
I didn't pick it. Chalmers picked it. Why?
Stay away from those windows. That's why.
Say, look,
Sit down and relax, Ross. It's a long wait until Monday morning.
You better get a fix on some food.
982-5997.
Some food.
97.
I know Chalmers wants you to be happy, and we'll do the best we can.
Dad, it's for you. Listen, you're not going.
Listen, we're going to go to a room because I don't want him to go alone. I don't.
Hold it down. Hold it down. Don't be too late.
Why don't we just go to a movie? I don't want you to come.
Hello.
Hello. Captain?
Frank?
We'll see you later, Dad.
I've seen Chalmers.
Uh-huh.
What do you know about Ross?
Chicago. It could be very big. He had access to all the records. He ran the wire
services.
There's
a deli down the block.
Pete.
Okay.
Did Chalmers ask for me?
Uh-huh.
Do you happen to know why?
Yes, I know why. He's grooming himself for public office.
And
you make good copy.
They
love you on the papers, Frank.
Yeah, okay.
I see. Okay.
Just trying to
so keep long,
you
sir.
Happy.
I said okay. Say, who were you talking to about me on that telephone? Now look, Mr. Chalmers said this was just between me and him. Me and him, man, that's all.
Dalgetty here will take the first shift. Stanton will be on at 12, and I'll take the third. Now, all you've got to worry about, Ross, is just staying away from those windows, especially at night. You call me before you leave.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Frank, completely blanking Ross, heads out through the door. Dalgetty carefully locks it after him. Frank and the junior cop, Stanton, walk along a street.
Fire escape in the freeway.
Bad news, right?
Right. Want me to stay?
No. We're going to be away.
What shift?
Second.
We're working a weekend. We get 2 days off.
So long.
Frank walks away. He bounds up a flight of stairs at the top of which stands a headless statue. He walks into a vast office space, the walls of which are festooned with certificates.
Hi.
Hi.
Frank saunters up to a desk where a pretty young woman is working.
Is this a new fountain?
Fountain? All a client can afford is a leaky faucet.
I thought that money didn't matter to artists.
It costs money to have a soul.
Friction, loss of water and feet per 100 feet, length of pipe formula, using constant 100 size of standard pipe, in inches.
I wonder, you 600 gallons of water per minute. Now, what's the velocity per second of a 5-inch pipe? Oh. Look to the extreme right. Now go down the figures until you find 600.
Got it.
Now go across until you find the 5-inch pipe column. What does it say?
9.8.
Now I want the loss in feet.
Feet, huh?
Well?
I lost my place. Nobody's perfect. Huh?
Frank approaches a cafe counter.
May I use your phone, please?
Good evening. Right this way.
Thank you.
Yeah?
Dell? Coffee Cantata, 931-0770.
931-0770.
Right. If a Sergeant Delgetti called me, would you be kind enough to let me know right away?
Certainly will.
Thank you.
Frank returns to the restaurant area of the hip jazz joint. The pretty young architect sits at a table surrounded by relaxed friends. Frank joins them. A waiter takes their orders. Seated across the table from the young female architect, looks over to her as he eats. She turns towards him and he smiles warmly at her. Lies awake in bed. He reaches over for the phone.
Yes.
Dell, I'm coming off now.
Everything okay?
Yeah, sure. Hey, hold it down, will you? I'm sorry.
Ross reduces the volume on the radio and sits down on his bed, smoking.
Anything for Stan?
No, I'll see you tomorrow.
Frank replaces the receiver silently and lies back down. Next to him in the bed lies the pretty architect, seemingly asleep. She opens her eyes dreamily.
Who was it?
Dell.
Something exciting?
Go to sleep.
Meaning you won't tell me anything.
It's not for you, baby.
Anything you do is part of me.
He turns his head towards her. After a brief pause, they begin to kiss intimately. Ross appears to be feeding coins into the rented radio, which now glows into action again. Stanton sits in the next room, his feet up, reading a newspaper. Ross spins around at the sound of the phone.
Yeah?
Front desk. Two gentlemen, should I send them up?
What are the names?
Hold on a minute. Mr. Chalmers and a friend.
Ross eyes the chain on the door.
All right, listen, tell them to wait and give me 421-7596.
Ross crosses stiffly to the front door and picks up a sandwich from a side table. Frank answers the phone.
Frank?
Yeah. Chalmers, downstairs with another man. They want to come up.
Chalmers at 1 o'clock in the morning? No, don't let him in. I'll be there in 5 minutes.
Right. Please, away from the door.
Ross, munching his sandwich, obeys with studied slowness. The cop looks towards the door, the chain of which is now undone. The cop is shot in the leg and falls to the floor. His attacker kicks him in the face. The shadowy figure now trains the gun on Ross, who looks confused and begins to back away.
Wait. Now look.
Ross is blasted back against the wall as a bullet smashes into his left shoulder. Blood sprays up onto his face and over the bed and the wall. The gunman, wearing black leather gauntlets and a light mac, dismantles the gun and slips it into his pockets, then removes earplugs from his ears. He stoops to pick up the shell cases and exits with the other man who has remained by the door throughout. Ross lies inert on the bed, illuminated by the headlamps of the cars on the freeway. The badly wounded cop lies panting on the floor. Out on the street, a leather-clad motorcycle cop waves through a police car. Ambulances and police cars, their lights flashing, have gathered outside the building, as have various onlookers with nothing better to do at 1 a.m. A uniformed policeman strides towards the door. Dalgetty emerges in the company of 2 stretcher-bearers carrying a man whose face is now heavily bandaged. Camera-toting journalists peer down. Frank screeches onto the scene in his sleek Mustang.
Who is it?
Ross. 2 guys. They got him with a shotgun.
What about Stan?
They got him in a leg. They're bringing him down.
Stick with Ross. Okay. Barney?
Yeah.
As soon as the lab men get out of 634, seal it. Let's seal it, Barney.
Yes, sir.
Ross, on his stretcher, is slid into the rear of an ambulance. Dalgetty climbs in beside him. Across the road, seated in a car, the 2 attackers observe proceedings. As the ambulance pulls away, they follow at a discreet distance. Inside the building, Frank waits as the narrow lift descends, bearing Stanton, the wounded cop, propped almost vertically on his stretcher. The doors open and the stretcher bearers jiggle him out of the lift. He looks in a pretty bad way. Frank speaks to one of the medics.
How bad?
Bad. He's got a bleeder.
Frank, full of concern for his junior colleague, walks close to the stretcher as they continue towards the ambulance.
The door's not open.
Oh, somebody screwed up.
They screwed up, the door's not open.
Somebody put the bed in.
Frank helps the medics by opening up the door, climbing into the ambulance and letting down the metal side of the bed. The medics lift Stanton on board.
Thank you.
But I've got to know now. The two men. Do you remember anything?
Okay. Auto fire, about 5'10", white hair. Gun, Winchester pump. All I remember. Came in so fast. Frank? Chain was off. He unlocked the door.
Who unlocked it?
Ross. Like he's expecting someone. How's my leg?
Hold on, Carl. We'll be there in a couple of minutes.
Into an unlit parking area screamed the ambulance and escorting police car. The driver reverses up to the entrance to what appears to be a hospital. White-coated medics crowd around a gurney as it is whisked through the doors into the casualty unit.
Scissors, Jones. Okay, somebody get the blood pressure. Oxygen. Can I have an ABD pad?
Frank looks on gravely as the doctors work on Stanton.
Okay. Can you move your hand? Hey, do you want to step out? Your buddy's all right. His legs will be okay. Somebody get x-ray.
Use your quiet.
Thank you.
Bust in.
He'll be all right, but he's busted up. Ross?
I don't know, Frank.
You better call Stanton's wife and get her over here.
Okay.
Dalgetty does as bid. Frank goes to gaze through the window of a door.
It's best to get on an intercostal thalsis and move him away.
Suture ligature.
Yeah.
What is it?
3-0.
What's his blood pressure now?
Scissors.
It's down to 90 over 70. He started the blood going.
Switcher.
Kelly.
Scissors.
Better let me tie this one.
Okay.
Medicine bomb, please.
Accepted.
Pick up.
BP's dropping. Vinyl. Pulse is also going up now.
What was it, pre-op?
BP pre-op is 140 over 90.
Tom, take this.
Now it's down to 90 over 70.
How much blood do you have?
Another refractor. We have four up here. We've ordered four more units.
Alexander, please. Mm-hmm. How much have you given him?
We're starting our first one right now.
Yeah, I better bring me another one.
Mayo, please.
Peanut shutter, please.
Frank waits nervously as the surgeons work on Ross.
This is the subclavian.
Is your wife back on?
Thank you, Deanna.
Yes.
The chief surgeon emerges.
What are his chances?
No more than 50-50. We stopped the hemorrhaging, but they got some of the major blood vessels.
Thank you, Doctor.
Frank walks slowly through the emergency ward. It is full of the clutter of life support equipment, crowding a few beds in which lie very poorly patients. A grave-faced young blonde woman sits stock still by a bed. She looks up as Frank appears. With the merest hint of a smile, he seems to be trying to give her encouragement and sympathy. In the bed lies Stanton. Frank turns and walks away. A monitor shows the heart rate of the heavily bandaged Ross. Frank stands by the bed. His boss, Sam, enters the ward.
How's he doing?
Holding.
Stan?
Okay, he's sleeping now.
I want to talk to you.
Frank follows his boss out of the guarded side room where Ross lies.
I got the report back from the lab. Nothing at the hotel. How come they got in?
Ross got to the door and hooked the chain from the inside.
He let the killers in himself. Well, why would he do a thing like that?
I'm waiting to ask him.
What about the setup? What do you think about that?
Shotgun and a backup man. Professionals.
Yep.
They arrive at the lifts. Sam presses the button and then turns back to Frank.
I had to call Chalmers.
And?
Didn't get down too good. It's a main event for him. You know, the Senate subcommittee hearing? Now he can't produce the big surprise he promised everyone. He may try to make up some mileage by laying it on us. Play it by the book from now on.
Does Chalmers run this case, or do I?
All I'm interested in is results. Do whatever you think is best. I'll try to back you up.
Sam presses the button and the lift doors close. Frank looks lugubriously at his superior and then moves off.
Excuse me, sir. Are you the policeman who hasn't eaten?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Surely.
Frank delightedly takes the tray bearing milk and a sandwich from the nurse and saunters off down the corridor. Outside in the dark, a car pulls up. Chalmers and his retinue mount steps and come in through the doorway into the hospital.
Where is he?
They head up a corridor. Ross's surgeon leans across a patient in a bed. Chalmers and his two sidekicks walk onto the ward. Chalmers half acknowledges Frank, who stands in a side room eating his sandwich.
How is he, Doctor?
As well as can be expected. He's still under the anesthesia.
I'm Walter Chalmers. Is there any possibility of my getting a deposition from Ross before Monday?
That's impossible to say at this time. He may remain in shock.
I thank you for doing all you can, Doctor.
Chalmers turns to one of his men.
Get the supervisor.
Chalmers then goes into the room where Frank is standing. He looks at him pointedly and then slides shut the glass panel onto the rest of the ward.
Now, what went wrong, Lieutenant?
Who else knew where he was?
What?
Who else knew where he was?
What are you implying?
Well, they knew where to look for him and they used your name to get in.
Are you suggesting I disclosed his whereabouts?
Somebody did. And it didn't come from us.
That's hardly the issue.
Well, it certainly is. I've got an officer with a family. And he's shot up pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. And I've got a witness who can't talk.
I want to know about Ross. What was the deal you made with him?
Deal? Lieutenant, don't try to evade the responsibility. In your parlance, you blew it. You knew the significance of his testimony, yet you failed to take adequate measures to protect him. So to you, it was a job, no more. Were it more, and you the dedication I was led to believe?
You believe what you want. You work your side of the street, and I'll work mine.
Lieutenant, I shall personally officiate at your public crucifixion. If Ross doesn't recover during the course of the hearing, so I can at least present his deposition. And I assure you, I shall not suffer the consequence of your incompetence. And even if there wasn't any, I'm rather certain I can prove negligence on your part. There may be another attempt on his life. I'll be back in the morning with my people. Thank you, Doctor.
The surgeon, who appears to have been within earshot, enters, glancing sympathetically at Frank.
I'd like like to have Dr. Willard replaced. I think he's too young and inexperienced. I'd prefer my surgeon. Would you inform the administrator, please?
But Dr. Willard is one of our...
I'd like him replaced, if you don't mind.
Well, I'll report this to our administrator.
Thank you very much.
Frank and the surgeon exchange a look. The surgeon exits. Frank turns to look at the retreating figure of Chalmers. Chalmers and his men go back out through the lobby of the hospital. A group of doctors and nurses enter through another set of doors. Under the cover of this group, the white-haired man in the light mac who shot Ross and Stanton casually walks into the building and crosses the lobby. He loiters discreetly in a corridor. A doctor walks past.
Doctor, a relative of mine, he's here with a gunshot wound. Could you please tell me where I can find him?
Why don't you try at the reception desk just down the hall?
There's no one there, Doctor.
Well, he could be up on the second floor in the emergency room.
Thanks, Doctor.
The man turns and walks away. A nurse works at a desk.
Yes? Oh, Lieutenant, it's for you.
Frank gets rid of his tray and comes to answer the phone.
Thank you. Yes?
Dr. Kenner, this probably isn't important, but a man just asked me whether a relative of his with a gunshot wound was in the hospital. I thought you should know about it.
Is he about 5'10", gray hair?
Uh-huh. I'm afraid I told him that he was on the second floor.
Thank you.
Frank dials out.
Tell Getty.
I think our man's in the building and he was tipped where to find Ross. You take the ground floor, okay?
Got it.
Dalgetty hangs up and has a discreet word with a uniformed cop.
Get in Ross's room. Nobody in except Dr. Willard and the nurses.
Frank dispatches a uniformed officer and then prowls away. Dalgetty emerges from the entrance to the hospital, which is under police guard. The hitman emerges from a side room and casts a wary glance along the corridor. He turns to see the duty nurse at her desk, and then goes back through the door. Lifting his trouser leg, he reveals a pointed tool strapped to his calf with tape, which he now tears off. A nurse carrying a tray walks along the corridor and through the door. The hitman glances at her and slips away. She runs away, passing Frank coming to investigate. The hitman heads at speed down a stairwell with Frank in hot pursuit. The killer peers through the ground floor exit only to see Dalgetty and the guard. He continues on down with Frank still on his tail and goes through into the basement area. Frank pulls open the door and peers both ways along a corridor lined with pipework. There is no sign of the hitman. Frank continues warily past a metal grill fence. He pads down a wide corridor with doorways on either side. He pauses at a corner, then stamps his foot, trying to flush out his adversary. He heads off down another corridor. He passes cautiously through into a kind of utility room. A rocking chair sits in the middle of the space. A bicycle is parked up. Frank casts a look over his shoulder. He tries a door, finding it locked. He continues onwards. Behind a pillar in the shadows stands the hitman clutching the large metal-spiked tool. Frank continues onwards, failing to catch sight of the man. He pauses. Frank looks around, then listens again. The hitman is pushing the bar of a fire exit door. Thank you. Frank now heads off at a run back the way he came. The hitman bursts through the fire escape and now pelts along one of the narrow corridors. Frank pursues at speed. Frank tries two locked doors and then pauses by a third before pulling out his gun. He yanks it open. The room within is empty, but a small window in the corner swings open. Frank goes to investigate to find that there are bars on the exterior. He spins around as bundles of laundry crash down through a chute. On the other side of the barred window, the hitman runs past. Frank tries one of the other doors again. He spots a fire extinguisher and smashes through the glass of the door. He runs through the dawn light into the car park area of the hospital, looking all around for the killer. Back up in the ward.
Polly, call anesthesia and bring the crash cart.
Doctor, there's a cardiac arrest in the ICU.
The nurse hurries off. Two nurses now bustle through with the defibrillation equipment. A surgeon in scrubs runs towards Ross's wardroom. A team of doctors work on the prone body. Frank reappears. He turns to the uniformed guard at the door to Ross's ward.
Get Delgetty, you and the patrolman cover the lobby.
Okay.
I can't get her blood pressure.
Go.
Do you want to defibrillate again, Dr. Barber?
Not now. Not with that complex.
Somebody in.
How much by carb?
Yeah, 15 p.m.
Go ahead, push it in.
Okay, you want some more after this?
Dress him up.
All right.
Any pupillary reaction? No, dilated and fixed. Get some calcium up, too.
Frank looks on with his piercing blue eyes.
What's that now? What's he got? No activity. You want to get some more epinephrine? Half a milligram, push.
Frank stares at the flat-lining monitor as if digesting the consequences of this to his own career. The young surgeon moves to switch off the monitor.
Doctor, I need your help.
What is it?
I want this kept open. If Chalmers finds out that Ross died, he's going to fold this up, and I want the man that killed him.
I understand.
But I don't want your head on a block.
I understand. His chart could be misplaced.
You filed it. It's missing. I'll take the responsibility.
All right.
Frank spots Dalgetty hurrying along the ward towards him and goes to meet him.
Call the coroner's office. Tell them to put Ross under a John Doe. I want a private ambulance, unmarked, and I want it quiet.
Okay.
The head surgeon stands behind the sliding glass panel of the side room in conversation with the surgeon in scrubs. Frank joins them and talks. A hearse-style ambulance cruises through a quiet rear entrance to the hospital. Dalgetty nods to the driver. He goes to open the doors to a lift in which stands the head surgeon and Frank, who helps him wheel out the gurney bearing Ross's corpse. Frank catches the doctor's arm.
As far as you go, Doctor. Take it slow.
The body is stashed into the rear of the ambulance. Frank casts an eye around. And then he and Dalgetty both climb into the vehicle.
City morgue. Let's go.
Frank's Mustang crests one of San Francisco's vertiginous streets. At the bottom of the slope, the car wheels to the left and heads off down another steep incline overlooking the bay and the Golden Gate Bridge. He pulls up parallel to a parked car and then reverses up the incline into the free space behind it. Sun shines on the tall buildings at the top of the hill, while the gully formed by the street remains in shadow. Frank gets out and locks the driver's door. He strolls across the road. Outside a general store, he searches in his pocket for change for the newspaper machine. Finding none, he expertly bangs the top of the Perspex cabinet. Looking around innocuously, he lifts the cover and takes a copy. He heads into the store and picks up a bunch of spring onions. The owner stands trimming produce.
Fresh today.
Frank heads further into the crammed store and puts his paper down on the counter. Now at the deep freeze counter, he loads up with an armful of ready meals. Emerging from the store with his purchases in a brown paper sack, he crosses, passing a vintage car parked at the curb. He mounts steps from the pavement. Inside his own apartment now, he climbs the stairs and deposits his ready meals in the icebox. Chalmers, now with a retinue of three men, walks purposefully through the hospital ward. Finding Ross's room empty, he enters and looks around.
See if Dr. Willard's still in the hospital. Get Lieutenant Bullard on the phone.
Chalmers walks out. Two journalists wait in the hallway.
I'm sorry, Joe. He's been transferred to another room.
Dr. Piper.
May I have an outside line, please?
May I speak to your supervisor, please?
I'm afraid she's busy at the moment.
I'd be very grateful if you'd tell her that Walter Chalmers wishes to see her immediately. It's very urgent.
Yes, Mr. Chalmers.
The nurse obediently leads Chalmers out.
I'd like to speak with Dr. Willard, please. Thank you.
One of the journalists, pipe in mouth, watches Chalmers go. A woman in nursing uniform approaches Chalmers in a corridor.
Yes, can I help you?
I wanted the other supervisor.
The night supervisor went off duty an hour ago. I'm Mrs. Francis. May I help you?
You may indeed. There was a patient here. His name is Johnny Ross. And he seems to have disappeared.
Disappeared?
He was in intensive care, but there's no record of his whereabouts in the hospital.
But that's impossible.
May I see his medical chart, please?
I'm sorry, but hospital regulations...
It's an official police request. Is it not, Captain Baker?
Yes, Captain. I'll take care of it.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Dr. Willard's gone off duty.
Call him at home.
Are you sure he's not there? Do you have Dr. Willard's home number?
Dr. Willard?
Yes.
Is there anyone near the
camp? Joe, I'm terribly sorry, but there's been some medical complication as regards my witness, so I'm afraid I'll have to forego that bedside picture, as much as it would have compensated for his inability to testify tomorrow. But in all decency, I can hardly force the issue.
Well, does this mean your surprise witness won't be able to make any statement?
Well, the man was near death when he was brought in here. In view of the attempt on his life, I'm sure you can understand my reasons for secrecy.
Yeah, of course.
Good to see you again.
I can't reach Lieutenant Bullard either.
All right, keep trying.
I'm sorry, I can't find Mr. Ross's medical chart. It's evidently been misplaced.
Or appropriated.
Appropriated?
All right, I'll inform the administrator. Thank you very much.
Chalmers turns to Captain Baker.
All right, I want a complete list of the night staff who might have been involved in helping bullet spirit Johnny Ross out of here. I'm certain he grabbed my witness for his personal aggrandizement.
I'll lay odds on that.
And find Ross.
Get on it right away.
Mr. Chalmers, I have Lieutenant Bullitt.
Chalmers goes to take the phone.
All right, where's my witness?
I've got him.
Where is he? Are you going to tell me or not?
Well, I can't at the present time.
Captain Baker would like to have a word with you.
Now listen to me, Lieutenant.
All right, nail him. I want him written off.
No problem.
Frank, either sweating heavily or wet from the shower, turns away.
Do you want some breakfast?
The lovely young architect, dressed in a blue silk pyjama top which shows off her slender legs to utmost effect, sets a cereal bowl down on a small circular table in the window bay. As Frank pulls on a blue turtleneck, she brings him a cup of coffee and then returns to sit at the table. Frank, meanwhile, slips on his shoulder holster, smooths his hair and pulls on his jacket. He moves across to where she sits, smiling fondly up at him.
Thank you.
For what?
As Frank heads off, she remains there, demurely eating her cereal and seeming to ponder. Frank walks down the corridor of the cheap hotel where the shooting happened. A policeman stands guard.
Okay, Lieutenant.
Is it open?
The door's open, sir.
Frank enters the room and looks around intently. He checks the door chain. He peers inside a paper grocery sack. He does a double take as he sees on the wall a police diagram of where Ross and Stanton were found lying. He moves closer to investigate, his attention drawn particularly to a photo of the wounded Ross sprawled on the bed. Gazes around the room, at the taped-off bed, then out through the window at the grinding traffic on the double-decker freeway. Dalgetty interrogates the hotel receptionist.
Now think back to the time the two of them first came in and you saw them. Anything you can remember.
Like I said, they hit me before I got a chance to look at them. I don't remember nothing about it. Nothing.
Start remembering.
I can't. And that's the honest truth.
Dalgetty, take him downtown.
Lieutenant, give him a chance, will you? He's trying.
No, he's not trying hard enough.
It'll come to him.
You're wasting your time.
Okay, come on.
One thing about the guy who hit me, he had a square face. There wasn't much light here. They tried to save on electricity.
Like this?
Dalgetty places photo fit pictures into a frame. The receptionist crosses to look.
You know, thinner. That's it.
Now it's coming back. Let's go to the guy in 634. No luggage.
That's right, sir.
And he didn't store anything.
No, sir.
He came in empty, which means you gave him a good look over.
Always do. They're the ones I give the eye to.
Then you saw how he arrived?
Yes, sir, in a cab.
What line?
Sunshine cab.
Dalgetty glances at Frank, who leaves.
Now, the guy who hit you, how old was he?
Oh, about 50.
What was his hair like?
Gray, getting bald. Bald on both sides.
That?
No, balder. Am I helping you, sir?
I never had it so good.
Frank pulls up in his Mustang. He gets out. Water cascades down over the rear window of a car in which sits a model nodding Alsatian dog. Foaming brushes and sponges work up a lather on the car windshield. The vehicle is towed through the car wash, revealing itself to be a sunshine cab. Frank stands looking on. The cabbie who drove Ross on his arrival in San Francisco pulls on his cigar as he waits for his car to emerge. Frank approaches him. The cabbie now drives.
The first stop was the morgue.
How long?
Not long.
Pull over there and wait.
They pull up by the luxury hotel where Ross checked for messages. As Frank walks off up the driveway, the cabbie looks around as if slightly bored by the whole thing. He now pulls up at the curbside. Frank gets out and goes to the phone booth from where Ross made a call. He slots in a coin and dials out. A black car cruises to a halt across the street.
Tuesday. I need some information on a Johnny Ross in Chicago.
Give me half an hour. Meet you in Enrico's.
Right.
Frank saunters back to the cab. The cabbie turns to him.
Two.
Two what?
Calls. He called twice. The second was long distance.
How do you know it was long distance?
He put in a lot of change.
Frank returns to the phone booth. The dark car waits at a slight distance. Seated inside are the hitman and his sidekick. People in their Sunday best flock into what appears to be a cathedral. Sam, Frank's boss, and his family hurry up the steps. At the top stands Chalmers, who observes the arrival of the police captain with interest and then addresses him.
Morning, Sam. I don't believe I've had the pleasure.
This is Mr. Chalmers, my wife, Mrs. Bennett, my son Paul, my son Tony.
Tony, how are you? Mrs. Bennett, would you mind if I had just a moment alone with Sam?
Oh, of course not.
It must be difficult raising children in the world of today. I presume Tony's a college student.
Yes, that's right.
Well, I can well imagine the financial strain of sending a boy to the university on the salary of a captain. But there's no reason why a man with your potential, Sam, shouldn't move right up, given the right support.
My family's waiting for me, Mr. Chalmers.
Bullet abducted my witness. He removed him from the hospital.
As his superior officer, I've given him complete charge of the case. If he's moving Ross around, it's for a reason.
So you mean that you will not order him to reveal where he's keeping Ross?
It's his case, Mr. Chalmers.
Captain, I'm serving you with a writ of habeas corpus, making you responsible for the delivery of Ross. Duly observed, you have received it. Now, I need that witness to prove his very existence. And I do not...
Excuse me, sir. Dad, Mom's waiting.
Would you excuse us for just another moment, Tony?
All right, sir.
I do not choose to have people accuse me of false promises for the sake of cheap sensationalism, or to be compromised by your lieutenant. Castrated.
Sam watches Chalmers go with a look of distaste. He then hurries on to where his family stand waiting for him at the entrance to the cathedral. The sunshine cab purls along a sunny street and then pulls to a halt. Frank gets out.
Wait for me. It won't be long.
The cab pulls around the corner as Frank saunters across the road among crowds of other pedestrians. He walks towards a cafe called Enrico's. He enters the cafe. He approaches a couple sitting at a table and speaks to them. The man, tall with side whiskers and horn-rimmed sunglasses, gets up and follows Frank out of the cafe. They cross the road together and come to stand in front of a large window showing photos of what seems to be a girly show.
According to my sources, the organization Chicago branch caught Johnny Ross with his hands in a till. They estimate he siphoned off about $2 million while operating their wire service. Story is they tried to get rid of him. Friday night, Chicago.
Chicago?
He got away unharmed. They believe he's hiding here in town.
How old is this information, Eddie?
4 hours. They're looking for him all over town, Frank. They've staked out the docks, the airport, to keep him from leaving the country.
Anyone else trying for a hit?
Haven't heard of any such likelihood.
What about his brother, Pete?
In the clear.
Okay, Eddie. Thanks. Anything I can do for you?
There's something. You remember Sashu? They gave him 3 to 5.
What's he in for?
Receiving stolen property.
I'll try.
Thanks, Frank.
Frank walks off down the street. The Sunshine cab pulls in at the side of a busy road. Frank gets out and peels notes from his wad, which he hands to the driver.
There you go.
Take care, Lieutenant.
Frank Bullitt walks back onto the car wash lot to retrieve his Mustang. The dark sedan belonging to the hitmen pulls in across the way. As Frank goes to turn on the ignition, he catches sight of the car. A half smile crosses his face, as if he is confident he can lose them. He backs up and heads away briskly. He powers under a flyover and away. The black sedan is now in pursuit again. The two sinister figures calmly watch the rear of the Mustang as it merges with the traffic a short way ahead. They remain at a distance and observe as Frank swings around to the left and then immediately right to start climbing one of the city's steep hills. The driver of the sedan powers after him. Top of the rise, they pause, trying to determine which way Frank has gone. Finally, they take a left and head upwards. They crest a hill, looking all around them for clues. The Mustang suddenly becomes visible in the rearview mirror of the sedan. The driver clocks this. Swerves around a truck and speeds after the black sedan. He tucks in behind it as the sedan has to wait for a series of trams to cross. sedan swings a left. Frank does likewise. Frank keeps the black car in sight. The driver now clips his seatbelt on. Burning rubber, the black sedan roars away. Frank struggles to cut through the line of traffic, but finally heads off up the hill behind the sedan. The sedan leaves the ground as it crests a hill. The Mustang is close behind. The sedan takes corner after corner in an attempt to shake Frank off, but he just sticks like glue. Frank screams to a halt in a cloud of smoke, reverses up and swings a right, burning yet more rubber as he goes. He gets the sedan once again in his sights. The sedan is now piling down a long hill, swerving periodically to avoid joining traffic. Two cars jounce down a long switchback, leaving the ground at every hump. Other road users swerve and hoot. The sedan sheds another wheel rim and motors through yet another stop sign. Down on the flat now, the sedan, rather worse for wear, drives frantically with Frank still close on its tail. Head up a gentle slope and swing round to the right into a semi-rural road. The hitman looks back over his shoulder. Frank is still doggedly there. The driver of the sedan pulls out to overtake on a bend. A motorcyclist coming the other way sees the approaching car and topples off, skidding painfully across the road. Frank swerves to avoid the biker and ends up on the dusty verge. The driver of the sedan smirks as he sees the plume of red dust in his rearview mirror. Seeing the biker get up with the help of another driver, Frank now pulls away again. Blasts up a long incline around numerous blind bends. finally, he has the sedan in sight once more. The silver-haired killer pieces together his pump-action shotgun. The driver glances across as his colleague loads several shells into the breech. The sedan overtakes a car, missing an oncoming vehicle by a hair's breadth. They both undertake a truck and scrape against a metal barrier above a steep drop. A car swerves onto the verge to avoid them. They are now heading downhill again, within inches of each other, and jockeying and blocking each other. Frank manages to get alongside the sedan. As he sees the gunman winding down the driver's side rear window, he slams the Mustang against the sedan. As the gunman takes aim, Frank falls back. Bullet cracks the windscreen of the Mustang. Frank manages to shunt the sedan off the road and send it careering into what appears to be a small petrol station. Plumes of orange fire shoot upwards. Frank skids across the road, ending up with the nose of the Mustang in a ditch. The bodies of the two hoods are consumed in the inferno. Frank is driven by a squad car into the police vehicle compound. He walks with Dalgetty along the corridor of the precinct. His boss finishes talking with a group of men who leave the office. Sam looks at Frank severely as he and Dalgetty enter, then shuts the door angrily behind them.
What the hell is going on here? A high-speed pursuit? Two men are killed? An officer in the hospital? A witness almost murdered? Now, I want to know what's happening, and I want to know now. Let's hear it straight.
Here's a report.
Now, a man like Chalmers could be a great help to the department. He could speak for us where it counts. He could fight for us in the legislature. Now you have got to turn over his witness. Where's Ross?
Bullet turns his blue eyes towards Captain Baker.
Tell him. That's an order.
He's dead.
Dead?
He died last night.
After you moved him?
Before. I've got him downstairs under a John Doe.
Now you are sick. Smuggling a dead man out of a hospital? And now two men killed who may have had nothing to do with it.
The man I was chasing killed Ross.
How do you know? Did you see him?
Yes, he tried to nail me with a shotgun. A Winchester pump.
The radio report said the two men were burned beyond recognition. Now all he's got are two dead men who would never hold up in court.
Got one lead. I want to move on it.
Frank hands his boss a small pad of paper.
Miss Dorothy Simmons, Thunderbolt Hotel, San Mateo.
Ross called her person to person from a phone booth in Union Square, approximately 9 hours before he was killed.
So he called his girlfriend. What does that prove?
Bullet and Dalgetty glance towards their boss.
This is Sunday. I'm going to hold that writ until we come to work Monday morning.
Baker's expression remains neutral, but he brusquely leaves the room. Sam looks grave.
Frank. Go on, get out.
Frank heads out, with Dalgetty following. In the police car compound.
We'll try to check it through for you.
Need a car?
Sorry, Lieutenant. There's no cars left.
Back to you as soon as I can.
Frank spots Captain Baker cruising out of the compound in a grey saloon car. He weighs this up, gives a wry nod, and then leaves. Along an open road spins an open-topped old-style Porsche in primrose yellow. At the wheel sits the pretty young architect. She turns to Frank Bullitt, who sits in the passenger seat. They pull into what appears to be a large hotel complex, advertising Mother's Day brunch, 11 till 5. At the entrance portico, the car halts and Frank gets out. As he goes inside, she goes off to park the car. Frank stands at the hotel reception desk.
Miss Simmons doesn't answer.
What's your room number?
Well, I'm sorry, we're not allowed to give it. Oh, front, take this gentleman to room 114, please.
Having discreetly flashed his police badge, Frank is now led off by a hotel employee. They head across the hotel grounds to a brick-built annex. The employee goes to knock on a door. The architect sits idly musing in the Porsche. She adjusts the rearview mirror slightly. A man bearing something of a resemblance to Ross emerges from the hotel, removing a pair of gloves. He hurries away. The architect, looking somewhat startled, watches the arrival of the police car as it swerves into the car park and lurches to a halt by the hotel portico. She deliberates for a moment and then climbs out of the car. Three men, two in police uniform, run at top speed across the hotel grounds. The architect follows at some distance, likewise running. By the time the police have got into the room, the architect catches up and enters with them. She stops in shock as she sees lying on the floor the scantily clad body of a blonde woman, limbs at awkward angles and a bloody gash around her throat as if she has been violently strangled with a rough cord.
Hello. Del? Yeah. It's a strangulation.
Bullitt spots his girlfriend standing there, staring in distress at the body. He moves across, blocking her eyeline, and gently ushers her out of the room. Back out, now on a busy freeway, Bullitt drives the Porsche. He goes off down a slip road and pulls over to the verge. She gets out of the car, almost angrily. He watches as she crosses the road and walks some way in among the tall grass on the roadside overlooking the ocean. Frank gets out of the car and crosses. Comes to stand next to her, two small figures on the edge of a broad blue bay, on the other side of which stands a forest of cranes. She turns away from him, stoops to pick a yellow flower, and then returns to face him.
I thought I knew you, but I'm not so sure anymore. Do you let anything reach you? I mean, really reach you? Or are you so used to it by now that nothing really touches you? You're living in a sewer, Frank. Day after day.
That's where half of it is. You can't walk away from it.
I know it's there, but I don't have to be reminded of the whole thing. The ugliness around us. With you, living with violence is a way of life. Living with violence and death. How can you be part of it without becoming more and more callous? Your world is so far from the one I know. What will happen to us in time?
Time starts now.
She holds his gaze and then looks down. The traffic grinds along the freeway. At the precinct.
Charlie, what do you got?
Let's start with the cleaver.
All righty.
One cleaver. Approximately 8 inches in length.
All right. Lieutenant, Miss Simmons' luggage has just arrived from the airport.
Okay. Where is it?
For the gold shoes.
Right. Here you go. One pair of gold shoes. Yes.
Where is it from?
San Mateo Thunderbolt Hotel.
And who from?
Simmons.
What do we have?
One yellow metal locket. Yellow metal watch, pearl necklace. Put a hold on these.
Yes, sir.
Dalgetty takes a pair of bolt cutters to one of the two traveling trunks.
Serial numbers ought to show up under the lamp. They're not filed down very deep.
Dalgetty and Bullitt continue working at the locks of the trunks with a variety of tools.
Just having presented the property receipt.
Finally, Frank opens one of them, revealing neatly packed clothing, including a handful of neckties.
You got a man here.
Dearborn Travel Agency in Chicago, Rome. Look at all this literature.
Rome?
Yeah. What do you make out of that? I thought she was alone.
She's got a guy now.
First, we'll get a price tag in it.
Frank fishes out a smart leather vanity case. Unzipping it, he reveals a set of luxury hairbrushes.
We have a bag, Tony.
Frank holds up a brown sports jacket and rifles through the pockets, finally locating a small blue plastic wallet of $100 traveler's checks.
Bingo.
What do you got?
Great.
Albert E. Rennick. Who the hell is Simmons?
Look how much money he's got. Look at this. Loaded. All right, we got a Rennick.
What a Rennick is. Look what I came up with. Dorothy Rennick.
Okay. Drop it in. We're getting warm. AR. Is that grabby?
He holds up a monogrammed shirt.
Give me a bag, Tony. Fingerprints on this stuff. Let's wrap her up.
The two cops loosely repack the two trunks and head off.
Thanks, Tony.
Okay.
No ticket, no passport.
Call immigration in Chicago. Have them wire Rennick's passport applications. I'll get a fingerprint check on Ross, huh?
Okay.
There are multiple gunshot wounds of the left side of the face, the left side of the neck, and about the left upper thorax. These extend from the lateral extent of the left eye, and a portion of the left orbit has been lacerated, and aqueous humor protrudes from the laceration. There have been deep lacerations in the immediate area, and these have been approximated by fine surgical sutures. There are multiple surgical incisions about the left side of the face. There is considerable hemorrhage in these deep tissues, and a number of surgical sutures are present about this area. There are entrances into the sinuses, and several pellets are found located within this area. There are also multiple lacerations and multiple gunshot entrance wounds about the left side of the neck, and similar wounds are found on the left upper thorax. Period. The lacerations extend deep into the orbits, and a portion approaches the nasal pharynx. And there is an indwelling soft rubber catheter extending out through the lateral extent of the...
Bullitt emerges from the mortuary to where Chalmers awaits him.
I understand that Captain Bennett told you had until Monday morning to comply with my writ of habeas corpus. However, I want a signed admission now that Ross died while he was in your custody.
When I'm ready. Yes?
Lieutenant, your photographs are coming through.
I'll be right up, thank you.
I demand that signed statement now.
Excuse me.
Frank walks past Chalmers, a man clearly unused to being disobeyed. Bullitt looks on as a uniformed cop works what appears to be some kind of primitive fax machine on a desk at the precinct.
Is that the girl?
Yeah.
As Frank studies the printouts, he looks up to see his boss enter the office, followed by Chalmers and also by Captain Baker. They all stand, almost as if in reverence, as the machine, which is marked telecopier, clunks and buzzes. Chalmers throws a look at Frank, who stands eyeing the group and the machine non-committally. The uniformed cop finally unhooks the phone line, opens the machine, removes the carbon paper, and hands the captain a grainy print of a photo.
Ross.
Albert Edwin Rennick, used car salesman, Chicago.
Who's Rennick?
He was a man who was shot at the Hotel Daniel. He sent us to guard the wrong man, Mr. Chalmers.
Bullitt calmly gets on with his work, exiting the office, leaving Chalmers and Captain Baker looking rather foolish.
Mrs. Dorothy Rennick and Mr. Al Rennick have reservations on the 7 o'clock flight to Rome. Separate tickets not confirmed. And I got this report from Chicago. Rennick has no record of arrests. He's clean, Frank.
Yeah, well, Ross took close to $2 million from the organization, and he set Rennick up to get the heat off of him.
And he killed Rennick's wife to shut her up.
Nighttime. A sleek black car speeds through brightly lit slip roads at an airport, forking off to the departures area. Dalgetty is at the wheel. Frank sits in the front passenger seat. Dalgetty swerves in at speed to a parking space.
Passengers for flight 34 are now loading at gate 5.
The pair enter the airport.
Final call for flight 74 for Los Angeles, boarding at gate 3. Final call for flight 74 for Los Angeles,
San Francisco Homicide. Do you have a Mr. Rennick on a 7 o'clock flight for Rome?
Yes, he confirmed his flight a half hour ago.
Did he check in yet?
Not here, but he could do that at the gate. Shall I call security?
No. Call the gate, have him recheck all the passports.
But they're boarding
Which
now?
Which gate?
73.
Thank you.
The pair hurry away in the direction indicated through dense throngs of people.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Clipper flight 110 is now ready for boarding. We hope you have a pleasant flight, and thank you for choosing Pan America. No smoking, please, beyond this point. In addition, would you please have your passports available for inspection as you pass through the departure gate?
Dalgetty and Bullitt blend inconspicuously but watchfully into the crowd of passengers milling around the gate. Dalgetty discreetly shows his police badge to the official at the gate and passes through to where passports are being checked. No matter how intently they scrutinize the crowd, there is still no sign of the real Ross. Out on the tarmac, the plane is being prepared.
Pardon me. All right, step right in.
Thank you.
And you're with the tour too, are you? Mm-hmm. Well, there are other girls ahead of you. Step right on through.
Dalgetty stares at people as if one of them has to be Ross in disguise, and even now slipping through their fingers. Bullitt's pale blue eyes rake the passing faces.
Thank you. Whoops. Thank you.
Bullitt turns away as if in frustration. He comes close to Dalgetty and they murmur together. Frank grabs the phone on the departure gate desk.
Passenger service.
Can I help you, sir?
You have a Rennick, an Ali Rennick, flight 124 to London. What? Thank you. At the last minute on a room ticket. Flight control.
A queue of planes taxi towards the runway. In the cabin of an airliner.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've just been instructed to return to the gate. For your safety, please remain seated until the aircraft has come to a complete stop. We anticipate only a short delay. However, all passengers are requested to disembark and remain in the departure lounge. Thank you.
Ross, seated in the plane, looks concerned as it begins to taxi back to the terminal. Bullitt and Dalgetty walk briskly through the terminal and come to stand at one of the large windows looking onto the apron. Chalmers joins them.
He's still my witness. I'll be delighted to let you have him after he testifies tomorrow.
Bullitt turns away obliviously.
The organization, several murders, could do us both a great deal of good.
Look, Chalmers, let's understand each other. I don't like you.
Come on now, don't be naive, Lieutenant. We both know how careers are made. Integrity is something you sell the public.
You sell whatever you want, but don't sell it here tonight.
Frank, we must all compromise.
Bullshit.
Chalmers eyes him coldly and walks away. Bullitt and Dalgetty are admitted by uniformed flight crew into the corridor of the landing gangway. Taxis to a halt, the huge black painted nose cone reminiscent of some kind of grotesque koala bear. The gangway tunnel is pushed out and clamped to the aircraft door. The hatch door is opened. Bullitt waits in the entrance to the gangway.
Just about 45 minutes.
He studies the faces of the passengers as they disembark. Chalmers leans on a balustrade watching proceedings. Dalgetty scrutinizes the crowd.
Won't be long.
Bullitt boards the plane, squeezing past the tide of passengers disembarking. He scans the rows of seats. His eyes widen ever so slightly as he spots Ross. Ross catches his eye and then looks down. Bullitt remains standing in the aisle watching Ross. Ross now gets slowly out of his seat. He pushes gently through the crowd towards the rear of the plane. Bullitt appears to have lost sight of him momentarily. Ross now barges a stewardess out of the way and runs to the rear hatch door. Opening this, he leaps the 10 feet onto the runway and makes a dash for it. Frank Bullitt moves as fast as possible down through the cabin. He spots Ross running at speed. Bullitt leaps down. He runs beneath the wing of a taxiing jet. Ross makes the grass verge at the edge of the airfield. A stewardess hurries along the gangway tunnel to inform Dalgetty of what's happened. Frank arrives at the grass verge. He looks around, then removes his light Mac. He heads off in pursuit. Dalgetty, inside the terminal, grabs a phone.
Give me the security guard.
In the darkness on the airfield perimeter, Ross runs desperately over rough grass. He leaps and rolls down a bank. Frank appears to be closing in. He kneels down thoughtfully. Then he moves on. Ross, lying flat on the grass, observes Bullitt at about 50 meters distance, walking along the ridge of a raised bank of grass. Ross raises his pistol and gets Frank in his sights. Frank looks around cautiously. Ross appears to be waiting for the din of the aircraft to completely cover the gunshot. He shoots twice, sending up a spray of sandy soil and knocking out one landing light. Bullitt falls to the ground. Ross scuttles away. Frank is back up and in pursuit. Ross now runs parallel to a taxiing aircraft. He pauses as if to catch his breath. He then dashes beneath the wing of the now stationary plane and across the taxiway. Frank, in hot pursuit, dashes out onto the taxiway as the plane starts to move again. Narrowly missing the front wheels, he lies himself down on the tarmac and covers his ears against the shriek of the engines. The rear wheels pass close either side of him. As the plane clears him, he heads off once more. Ross runs wearily, his pistol still in his hand. Dalgetty seems to spot him from the terminal window and dashes off. Frank runs hard. Chalmers looks down from the observation balcony as Ross dashes across the apron and takes up a position by the undercarriage of a stationary jet. He levels his gun at the approaching figure of Frank Bullitt. Ross misses. He runs off again with Frank pounding after him. Ross makes the relative safety of the terminal building. Frank is about 50 meters behind. Dalgetty and a uniformed guard run at speed through the airport concourse. Frank arrives at a doorway onto the concourse. He pauses, looking through the glass, and then draws his own gun. He proceeds inside cautiously. His eyes rake the teeming crowds. A group of nuns, old ladies, a man who looks somewhat like Ross. Frank moves on, seeming to suspect that Ross may be hiding behind a large pillar. He spots Ross, who is trying to mingle with a crowd of passengers going through a gateway. Frank gives him a judiciously wide berth, appearing to be trying to cut him off. Ross looks around nervously. His hand, within the lapel of his jacket, still clutches his pistol. Frank is keeping a low profile. Ross clocks the hurried arrival of Dalgetty and the uniformed guard. Frank turns away, lurking at an airline information desk. Dalgetty passes on through. Frank turns back, trying to spot Ross. The uniformed guard stands at the side looking on. An airline official approaches Ross. He barges the man aside and runs off, shooting another guard at the doorway. Frank now aims his gun. Ross, shot twice through the upper body, crashes through the glass of the door and falls dead. Dalgetty waves away the gawpers.
All right, get back, get back.
Dalgetty looks gravely across at Bullitt, who circumspectly draws near to Ross's twisted, blood-stained corpse, and using the toe of his shoe, flicks his pistol away across the floor. He bends down to feel for a pulse. Feeling none, he gets up again, holsters his gun, and whips off his jacket to lay it over the dead man's head and shoulders. Chalmers emerges from the front of the airport building, his expression inscrutable. He climbs into a car, which then whisks him away. A sticker on the bumper reads, "Support your local police." Chalmers, sitting in the back seat, unfolds a copy of the Wall Street Journal. Ross's body still lies on the floor. Bullitt looks down at it. A priest reads the last rites over the security guard Ross shot. The steep street in which Bullitt's apartment is located. He walks calmly down the hill and up the stairs to his home. On the curb is parked the primrose yellow Porsche. Bullitt opens the door to his bedroom to find his girlfriend asleep in the bed. He gently closes the door again. He lays aside his coat and his holstered gun and heads into the bathroom. He looks at his own reflection in the mirror above the basin and then, as if sadly, back down to his hands in the water. The gun and the ammunition clip sit on the banister rail. The end.